Hello and welcome to the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang, and joining me as always are my fellow compatriots, Alex Cortez and Clark Price. How are you both doing tonight?
What's up?
What's up?
Sorry.
Someone's a little excited.
I'm trying to do it that old style, like the cliche from what was it? The 80s?
What's up?
Yeah, maybe better. Yeah. Anyway, I failed. But I tried at least.
How about you, Alex? How are you doing?
Well, I can't follow that, so I'll just say I'm doing well.
No, you shouldn't want to.
Yeah, I don't think you want to follow that one. Anyways, I kind of want to start with today with a little bit of a pop culture news, and I know Clark, you and I have talked about it a little bit, but I know Alex has probably paid attention to it as well. We should start with a little bit of pop culture and criminal news. Sean, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy Combs.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, has been.
Okay.
I mean, that's considered light because I don't have existential angst over it. But
all right.
But we could start with that, who's been arrested.
No. It is pop culture news.
Yeah, it's
all over.
He's been arrested.
Breaking news.
Arrested on charges of racketeering, sex trafficking, and engaging in all crazy forms of behavior, which should all be serious. But what made it salacious was the 1,000 boxes of baby oil.
1,000 and many cartons of, and
yeah,
containing 1,000 bottles of. Actually, they made a distinction of baby. I think there was 1,000 bottles of, there was baby oil, but also what they called personal lubricant. Mm-hmm. So, I just wanted to get the facts straight.
Maybe a Dave Chappelle was a sage and he was predicting the future back then. You don't know the reference, but you folks want to go and look that episode of the Chappelle Show, and
there are many oblique references to the behavior of Sean Puff Diddy Combs, but anyway, continue with your introduction there. You've gotten to the personal lubricant cases.
I mean, we want to get that out of the way because it's much more serious. And I want to also preface it. It is so serious that the judge in the case refused to even put up bail. And the bail that was suggested by Sean Combs's attorney was $50 million. He was prepared to put up $50 million, including his home, as a bond, and the judge refused to do so. So that's how serious the charges are with it. The charges including federal sex trafficking, racketeering, which means that there were multiple other criminal enterprises involved and other criminals involved in the commission of these crimes. And according to the Associated Press article, the whole gist of the crime, and at the center of this was Sean Combs, that he was presiding over a sordid empire of sexual crimes, protected by blackmail and also shocking acts of violence, to kind of keep the sex trafficking going. And these are all instances in the indictment that go back to 2008. So over 16 years, a decade and a half. He's mostly accused of using female victims and male sex workers, and giving them drugs, sometimes consensually, oftentimes forcefully. And they would go on days long sexual performances, dubbed freak-offs, according to the indictment. And then also the indictment also refers to attack on his former girlfriend, R&B singer Cassie. That has also been on video. And so the magistrate judge, Judge Robin Tarnowski, declined to grant him bail, and then he was let out of the court. So that's where we're kind of at. And, you know, Alex, what's some of your thoughts about it?
He wasn't shy about it. He did say he was a bad boy for life, right? So I think he's not looking more pretty life. But yeah, I mean, this is like really serious stuff. And I mean, it just goes to show you like how, I guess, the life of billionaires and their, I mean, I'm not saying all billionaires, but certainly some have certain proclivities to do these social deviances or deviant acts. And I think the money just fuels that. I mean, I don't think, you know, Puff Daddy, remove all that money. I mean, he wouldn't be doing these things. So that's not an excuse or say, you know, to removing of the guilt and the responsibility of those actions. And it's just the evidence, at least what has been shown, and I think kind of speaks for itself.
The indictment that was the portion of the indictment that's actually really damning is that the indictment alleges that Combs used explicit recordings, right? People who were in these drug fueled sort of freak offs, and then he held that against them to keep them silent about it with blackmail. And he would threaten people, right? Like in that Dave Chappelle parody, he would threaten people, with their performances and their future by dint of him being a record producer. And so it was not an insubstantial financial empire, because the district, the U.S. Attorneys, you know, did clearly label him a billionaire. I don't know if that was for exaggeration, but he was definitely labeled as a billionaire. And so this is a man who had a lot of money and a lot of power in the industry to make or break stars. And he used that control in a very sort of sick and sadistic way. Clark, what is your reaction to this as someone who's...
Well, it's... Yeah, I've been in the industry, and I've seen people destroy themselves with drugs. And I'm either financially or... And they died due to some direct cause of drug usage, or in some cases, both. But I think also that being wealthy is a foundation for serious mental illness to take place. And I think when you look at the definition of psychosis, which is someone who cannot discern reality from delusion, if you're a billionaire, you can emerge reality into delusion, and your self-image becomes warped. And greed is a form of mental illness and does very bad things to people. And it seems that there are people who get, you know, to the level like probably not, doesn't even take the billion, but certainly at a billion, it takes a very grounded person to not believe that they are a master of the universe, a god striding on the earth. And I think that, unfortunately, can lead people on a road of, I'll just use the standard word, perdition. And it seems to me this is that he had the inclinations for this, but his success fueled the obsessions and made them, brought them to a higher scale and involving a lot of people. And so I'm going to say that these are some of the most lurid things I ever heard, but I also have other thoughts about it. And that is that why does the Department of Justice make a big, lurid publicity show about this in the context of that Merrick Garland is one of the worst attorney generals in American history? And if Donald Trump is reelected and America falls, it will be in large part because of the failures of this incompetent attorney general, Merrick Garland, who seems to say that he is an upright human being, but has put out all of this information, which in itself is pornographic. And that he doesn't care about politics. Yet everything he did in saying he didn't care or he didn't want to service politics in the name of justice, that's exactly what he did. And you can read it in all of the favors and waivers that were provided to Donald Trump that wouldn't be provided to anyone else. Donald Trump, he hesitated 2.5 years on. I don't know how long the Diddy investigation has been undergoing, but Donald Trump is far more dangerous than P. Diddy is. And yet Donald Trump is walking free and on the threshold of the presidency. And right. P. Diddy is denied bail. I'm also going to say that I would be, and I think it's appropriate, that I haven't read the indictment. It is pretty bad because he's denied bail. But
it's not just the indictment; it's got to be the evidence.
Okay, let me just say that he is innocent until proven guilty. They say that no one was unwilling to do what they did. They were of legal age. It is legal, it looks like he was trying to do, pornography in real life or stage tableaus or whatever it was. I don't know. In some ways, I think it's possible to feel sorry for this person. He's obviously an addict, a drug addict, a sex addict. And, and how shallow a person must he be to that's his whole life, because that's what it seems like. I mean, putting on these shows and running all around and flying people around, it's just a complete waste of a life. So those are my variety of thoughts I have about it. I really don't like the way Merrick Garland does his job at all. So I'm suspicious, and I think it's a healthy suspicion. So I bet that I bet he's going to lose. And he will be jailed and he will lose everything. But Donald Trump win.
There's a possibility the total number of charges, I think was it like 500 years, I'm paraphrasing, but it's some ungodly number of years that Sean Combs could be in jail if he's convicted on all the charges. So I just think it's really it's a fascinating sort of pop culture story.
Well, it also I have to say this. I feel bad about saying it, but I do see that this is framed in a way which will reinforce the racist narratives that we see running around out there so freely and prominently, and they're an absolute part of the Trump campaign. So I'm, to the extent that P. Diddy is guilty, and again, innocent until proven guilty, I think it's very regrettable that he has allowed himself to fall into this narrative. And I can't imagine, the right wing in this country not using that and not talking about it between themselves in a salacious manner. So I think it's not a good thing for the United States.
Well, what do you think about that, Alex? Do you think the right is going to use it? Use this story? I don't know if they are. About, but, you know,
they'll just about spin anything. they'll find the narrative there to exploit. I don't know what yet. Obviously, I mean, probably the thing that would make sense based on their being so pro-family and so, you know, this moral superiority, self-proclaimed moral superiority. I think that's the angle they'll probably approach. And
well, definitely. Also,
well, then can I bring up? Then can I bring up the weirdness? Those photos of Donald Trump with Jeffrey Epstein. Can we talk about that then? I mean, if we're really going to be going there.
But it's if people have amnesia, particularly all the MAGA followers, they see it, but it's like they're not seeing it, or they choose not to see it.
Well,
and I don't know if it's a pass because he's white, or just because he's Trump.
You know, this thing about Jeffrey Epstein and being photographed. Obama was photographed with P. Diddy, and you know how photographs happen. Hey, can I get a picture? You don't judge. Yeah. You don't do a background check on people. You just let them take the photograph. And then most people understand that you don't necessarily, photograph does not mean an endorsement. Most people do understand that. And however, so, you know, as much as everyone knows that I absolutely, Trump disgusts me, and I think he's probably the worst human being that has ever aspired to power in the United States, and certainly the worst president of all time, the worst leader of all time. But having a picture with Epstein is not. Or a picture with Putin and all the awful people he's been photographed with does not necessarily mean much. And I don't subscribe to that necessarily. But Epstein also photographed with Bill Gates also had I think Bill Gates is certainly a billionaire and is subject to the same caveats that I raised earlier about what happens psychologically to people with in practical sense unlimited wealth. Anyway, I'll turn it back to you. I'm rambling.
Yeah, no, I just think it's it's not happening in a vacuum at some level, but I think it's more to come on it. It is more of a pop culture thing, I think, than it is an actual sort of meaningful news story in that realm. But it does lead us into sort of the salacious side the political spectrum, because it, the other big story I think that's out there is this crazy woman that we really haven't talked about on the show that we probably should. And that's
what, I think I know where you're
right.
Going.
Right. I mean,
her initials LL.
Yeah. Right. What a good Laura Loomer.
Yes.
Or as, what have you said it, Alex Looney, Laura, or is it Laura Looney?
Laura Looney.
I mean, she's a, It's really fascinating. I mean, she's outrightly racist. I'm not going to quote any of the things that she has said on her podcast, on right-wing shows, the time she's gone on the Charlie Kirk show. I mean, why would anyone want to talk to Charlie Kirk anyway? A woman that is so extremist and so racist, it's even too racist for Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's called it out. And we would say Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably racist. And,
extremely.
And but she is there. She is there at all the Trump rallies. She is there with Trump all the time. Trump denies knowing her. She's like, oh, she's just a nice lady. She's a supporter. And I sit there and I go, where's Melania? Is this woman the next wife? Is this the next wife?
She's supporting something, all right.
I mean, I was having a discussion with it, and my wife and I are the same mindset. Is like, well, there's clearly a type here, and Trump goes for that type, and I'll let you both talk about it.
Well, there's an established pattern as to how he moves from one to the next.
And I'm going to stop. We'll get to that, but I want to start with my most relatable experience. Serve allegory, not experience, but my most my allegory was in the last campaign in 2016. The woman that was, you know, sort of around Trump all the time, talking to him, blah blah blah, was Hope Hicks, a woman who did it, as it turned out, a woman who did have some moral fiber and some courage. I don't think
she did not have an intimate relationship with Donald Trump.
No, this is that's very clear. But this woman, but she was definitely there in his ear, calming him down, you know, talking through his ideas. There was a thought partner there. This woman is not Hope Hicks at all. And that's the thing. He has a certain type of woman that he's drawn to for whatever reason. And, you know, I think, you know, Clark, you've discussed it, that there seems to be a type, and it's very Republican. I mean, I guess the joke was like before and after MAGA. Right. I mean, maybe it's too superficial with discussion, but Trump is very superficial.
I would say that she's different in some ways. He has his previous wives and girlfriends have not been political activists before. They've been models. They've been kind of not in they're attractive people who are not into his world. She's QAnon. She's all of the most extreme. She got started in extremism with 9/11 conspiracy theories, in which the idea of an inside job, meaning that the president at the time that 9/11 took place, George W. Bush, and his hench people engineered 9/11 as a causes belli that would a pretext so they could prosecute a war in the Middle East. And I think anybody who actually knows anything about the Middle East knows that Osama bin Laden was a reality, Al-Qaeda was a reality, that the use of commercial airplanes as bombs was a plan that went way back prior to this, that the World Trade Center had been targeted right in 1993, and there was a bomb attack there. what we saw happen on 9/11, if you were alive and saw it, I did, and I was and am, what it appeared to be. But not according to Laura Loomer, it had to be a conspiracy. And that, by the way, that was one of Alex Jones's first big efforts. Alex Jones was the producer of a DVD that was released on this subject called Loose Change, which was like one of the major propagating things of this. So he did that, and then it evolved through a whole bunch of things into QAnon, and she's there all the way deep into it. He hasn't really been with anybody like this, at least that rose to the public eye. Yeah. But I think that the kinds of embraces they've been seen in, and all of this other, it looks like Donald Trump's doing what Donald Trump does. And you ask, where's Melania? She's probably looking at her prenuptial every day.
Alex, go ahead.
Well, we know Trump is an expert at sort of signaling to his fan base. And
right.
I think this is really right at the core of the Project 2025. That's his audience right now. He's saying, you know, he says one thing on publicly, but yet all of his actions are aligned with this. I think there's some strategy in his part. Does it seem like there's something more going on than just sort of this political alliance or this?
I don't really see how this
intellectual
works.
Consultation. I think there's some intimacy there, and like I think Clark was right in like looking at this.
Yeah, I don't see how this. I don't see how it serves him though. I think this is him. Maybe I think this is a bad move for him.
I think he's lost it.
Yeah, I think he's cracking up.
This is the decompensation. I think this is a decompensation. I mean, the line is too far because she is the one, right? And this gets us into some more relevant topic. She is the one that's probably in his ear, like, yeah, go tell them that the Haitians are eating cats and dogs. That's even too far for – that's even too far, right? Trump has a hold over the Republican Party, but that's too far for the Republican mayor of Springfield – Ohio. That's too much for Governor Mike DeWine. It's not too much for J.D. Vance, but we know J.D. Vance is just a complete – is a soulless sort of caricature. But
so, I mean, but where I was going with this is – and I'm saying, you know, has he lost it? And I'm being sort of facetious with that. I think he's realized he's going to lose his election. And he's just prepping people for like the most rabid of his base to incite violence again. He's going to do it. He's going to lose and he's going to do it. And he's lining up all his people.
I don't think he has many moves. And so we know what they are and where this is going. I think you're absolutely correct. The intimations of violence are all over the place. I think I mentioned before that I saw the sequence in which he's doing a rally, and there's typically media is on elevated stands for the camera tripods and so on, and some psycho follower of Trump is in the audience, and he's crawling up on the riser to attack the media. And Trump is like, beautiful, beautiful. And let him go. He's one of ours.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so sinister, dripping with an almost orgasmic as he's beautiful, as the guy is getting up there attacking. Insane to the extreme. What in the world is this guy doing on a public stage? And what in the world is Merrick Garland thinking, that he's preserving his independence from politics by not going after him? And the whole, I mean, he didn't have to even do an independent counsel.
Right.
Because no one thinks it's independent anyway. So it was just everything he's done has been a terrible move. So I think he's loathsome. And Biden's his boss. Biden knows everything that I'm saying. Why did he allow it? Anyway, is Trump cracking? Is he cracking up? Yeah, the things he said, the whole, that thing about the eating the dogs, that's desperation. That's nothing was working. And he thought, oh, I got to pull out the big guns. I got my, Laura told me, she says, this will do it. This is the coup de grace. All right. This is what I need. They're eating the cats. They're eating the dogs, the people that went there. And it's also seemed like he was struggling to, like, he said the dogs, the cats, like something else. And he kind of paused, and then they're eating the pets.
They're eating the geese. That was the next thing. It was the geese that they were eating.
Well, he didn't say that, though, did he? I don't believe he said that.
I don't think he said that in the debate, but somewhere else he said, the geese, they're also eating the geese.
Yeah, he was struggling to throw some more in there.
Like if putting more animals in there is going to make this better.
Yeah, the thing is that
put a whole menagerie in there. Put a whole menagerie.
Trump's grip on his base and people beyond his base that somehow think it's a good idea to vote for him is so strong that he could still win. It doesn't matter that he's cracking up. It's just like he's so authentic, and he's, you know, they've taken. Two assassins have gone after him. Both of them have been, at least at some point in their lives, MAGA people. Both of them look unhinged, and both of them are, in fact, the second one I have some suspicions about and might be more of a publicity stunt to engender sympathy and support for Trump rather than real. So I think there are some real questions. The first one, I think, was a genuine. I mean, people died and so on. So
I still have my doubts. I think it's also a way to maybe goad somebody into enact violence against Waltz and Harry.
Yeah, certainly Biden. That's right.
He certainly did it. And that idiot Elon is you know, he's echoing that. He said, "Well, how come nobody's doing this?" Yeah. No attention.
Yeah, well, I think that's a disgusting piece of garbage. I really think Elon is a bad person. The things he said, the reasons that he puts forth, these are bad things. And that statement was obviously, it's like, come on, you guys on the right, why don't you stand up and give them what they've given our guy? That's not acceptable. So, I think all the political violence is on the right.
Well, I mean, there's no better example of the terrible political violence that, I mean, I don't know how people can read Elon Musk and still be like, well, he wasn't really meaning it, or he's kind of on the edge of it. I was like, well, Taylor Swift comes out with her endorsement on Instagram, not on X, on Instagram, a very long form article explaining point blankly what her positions are. Of course, Donald Trump has the best statement on Truth Social. I hate Taylor Swift. Not a good idea. Don't anger the Swifties. And then Elon Musk goes out on X and says, oh, you win, Taylor. You know, you can have my baby and then I'll protect you from everything. And I'm like, what about that sounds like that's the appropriate response? Right? And how does that not sound incel, right? Like in that sort of vacuous alpha male type of energy that we should all decry as a society. I think he's lost touch with all reality, right, Alex?
Yeah, well, he's got his billions to going back to what we were talking about earlier, this wealth, obscene wealth, seems to be really corrupt the mind and just put people on a different just level of weirdness. And I think one of the worst things you can do to somebody is this misogynistic as Elon is to allow them to become wealthy.
It is something that can very much unbalance the mind and lead to necessarily psychosis and narcissism. When it takes that turn, it does seem like, for instance, Mike Bloomberg doesn't seem to be a psychotic. Bill Gates doesn't seem to be, although he divorced his wife, which was odd. And because they seem to be doing well as a couple. But I would say in most instances, it unbalances people. I would also point to Richard Mellon Scaife, the Mellon family. Why do they turn so frequently into right-wing nut jobs? How many billionaires have become left-wing nut jobs, if there is such a thing? It's always the other way. It's always power, aggression, control. It's telling us something when we should listen.
Well, it's certainly the political side that's going to ensure that their means of power, which is the wealth, only continues to grow. I mean, that they aligned with the left, it's sort of agreeing to, be used more of their wealth for, going to society. But I think that alignment causes that political shift in them.
Well, I don't know what caused Musk to go to the right other than this. Years ago when I met him, he was not like this. And he was, in fact, he thought he was saving the world with the electric cars. And now he thinks he's saving mankind, that we need to colonize Mars. We need to terraform Mars. And we need to become a multi-planet species in order to live, because we're going to destroy this planet. But he's not trying to save the planet. I think every one of his things is really a grandiose, based on this, narcissism, and the delusions that a narcissist often have. But on the other side of narcissism, there's something called narcissistic mortification. And this is a total decompensation that takes place in a narcissist from being, humiliated or disgraced. And I think that fateful moment in the debate with Kamala Harris, in which she said, "They're eating the dogs," and she just laughed. That genuine laugh I think, opened a pathway of narcissistic mortification into his heart.
Yeah.
And you can see he was shaken. He tried to double down and it didn't work. It's not, the games he has played are not working. So what card does he have left? I think it's violence. So I agree with what Alex said earlier. That's inevitable with Donald Trump.
Well, and I think what we have to prepare ourselves for is not election day. It's what comes after. And who knows what will happen then. And so I think it'll be very challenging to what comes next. You know, I am a little bit more hopeful because the debate went well. The new polling has come out, showing some increasing leads for, the Harris-Walz, ticket. And I am remarkably surprised at the low energy of the Trump campaign at this moment. Those rallies keep getting smaller. And part of it is Trump doesn't pay his bills. So he can't afford big rallies. And he's increasingly seemingly, taking Republicans down ballot, down to him. I mean, in more local news, I've seen some polling that Ken Calvert is in the fight of his political career. you know, because Will Rawlins, I think, is almost tied.
He was tied. He beat him last time until the absentees came in.
Yeah.
But I think you're presuming like all the, what are the polls saying and the debate and all that stuff. You're presuming that things are normal and that this is a fair election. Right. Often, you know, Donald Trump talks about they rigged it against me, rigged.
Right.
He's projecting.
Right.
What he and his hench people would love to do and probably are doing in every respect that they can. Recently, it emerged that the guy who said he was only going to call balls and strikes, John Roberts, has been putting his thumb on the scale for Trump all along and has been an active behind the scenes working for Trump. This is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who is as corrupt as Alito, who is as corrupt as Thomas is.
Yeah.
And are they corrupt? Absolutely. These people should not be on the court and to have them on. And of course, the corruption is all on the Republican side. Yeah. Because why? Well, they're for sale and they're also extremist ideologues. So who justify their extremism. With religious grounds, which I think is the case with Alito.
Yeah,
and possibly Roberts too, and probably to some extent with Thomas, but Thomas is just clearly greedy. But they're all doing well, and they're all looking for their reward if they put Trump in. And that would be the end of criticism, the end of jeopardy, which comes with the criticism, and probably a clean sweep of the entire court with Republicans. So I don't think that this election is necessarily going to be straight up and down. I think one of the moves that Roberts could make is Trump produces some kind of disruption. Certifications are delayed, and there is a clause in the Constitution that under certain circumstances that are inconclusive or whatever they say it is, because Roberts makes things up wholesale. It doesn't really matter what the Constitution says. He makes it up.
Yeah.
And so they could put, then we're going to put it into the House of Representatives. Once they do that, game over. Trump is the president. And that's all that, that's all she wrote. That will happen. And that will be a legal coup d'etat of the United States.
Well, that's the end of democracy.
Are they capable of it? Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
So don't feel good, so good about the polls. It's the other stuff.
Well, I'm going to take my positivity where I can take it at the moment. But one other topic I did want to get to while we still have a few minutes is the increasing tension. Well, I shouldn't even say the increasing tension. I think it's an outright war that's emerging between Israel and Hezbollah. It seems to have started with Israel loading pagers with explosives that were then distributed by Hamas. No, not by Hamas, by Hezbollah in Lebanon. And then walkie-talkies that are also exploding. What have the Israelis done and why? Well, I think we know why. Netanyahu needs to keep the war going in order to stay in power, and he will do
anything. And out of jail.
Yes. And he will do everything that he can to do that and to keep Israel in a war. And that appeases certain elements of Israeli society. Not all Israelis want this. That's clearly demonstrated by the fact that there have been protests and public demonstrations. But Netanyahu is in power, and he is kept in power by religious zealots, by individuals who seek to gain and profit from an Israeli empire. And I just think those tensions warrant a lot more attention than we're currently getting. But obviously everything's hinging on the next 48 days with elections here in the United States. So probably your thoughts, Clark, on this first.
I'm a person who loves Jewish culture and grew up with Jewish friends. My first long-term girlfriend was a Jewish girl, and I love Jewish people. I don't love Israel, and I don't connect my love for Jewish people as being connected to Israel. And because Israel is a state like any other state with capacity for good and evil. Is it a democratic state, as they claim? I don't see that. It is an apartheid state. And I find their behavior to be shockingly bloodthirsty. To have violated the Charter of the United Nations, in which no state can acquire the territory of another state through war and violence. But that's exactly what they're doing. Also, the scheme that you're describing, killing all of these people, adversaries, they view as their adversaries in Hezbollah, which I believe translates to Army of God. That is a decapitation. And to me, it looks like this is, the launching, the precursor to a major war, which may be an October surprise to influence the American election. Israel has a very outsized influence in the United States in American politics, and they do that through money, through the what's called the lobby, and through their quote allies, unquote, in the religious right, a number of whom believe that prophecy must be fulfilled in the Middle East for Jesus to return. And you have like John Hagee and what's his, I think Franklin Graham and a number of others who I think border on psychosis. And they've created an industry. But Israel's influence in the United States is like, people say it's like a tail, the tail wagging the dog. But I would say it's like a flea on the tail wagging the dog. And so this is a world crisis that Netanyahu has created. And I think it's because in chaos, there is opportunity in his mind. And when people are dead, you don't have to worry about them anymore. And so they're making a lot of people dead, including a lot of children. And I've met a number of Palestinians over the years, and they're people like you and me.
Yeah.
And they are not subhuman. And that's one thing about any time you run an apartheid state, you have to dehumanize the people you want to remove in order to justify their removal. And that's what they've done. And who else has that happened to in history?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as we're running at the end of our show, I think these are things that we need to think about. I don't think that war is ever a good solution. And there's catastrophic collateral damage anytime that there's a conflict in the Middle East, and nothing has changed about that. And so, you know, my prayers are with the people and the children who are in that way, in the way of all of this. But we're kind of coming up to the end of the show. So it is our tradition to do our one good thing. So guys, what is your one good thing for the week? Mine actually is an old one good thing. I think Alex and I probably have shared this one good thing probably earlier this year. But it is Shogun winning a ton of Emmys, at the Emmy Awards. And, so if you get the chance, definitely go watch Shogun. My guy Hiroyuki Sanada won, several awards, and I was very happy for him. So, Shogun, which is a masterful piece. I recommend people watch it, if they get the chance. One good thing, Alex Clark.
The fires seem to have abated, so that's good.
I think I'll bit of both your comments. I don't have a whole lot. I mean, we covered a very dark topic today. Popping out.
I think so.
I feel good about it.
That's right. I'm afraid it's not a joyous one, but I think we got some good points out about it all.
I think so too. And here's to the hope of having some lighter conversations here in a bit. I think it's been a little bit heavy in terms of the news front. And we didn't even really get to talk about some of the other stuff, the economic news, the half point interest rate cut, which should help everybody in general, particularly.
It's been a whole point. Yeah. I thought it was a whole point.
No, it's a half point, 50 basis points, which is 0.50 for the uneconomically inclined people who don't pay attention to, who aren't regular consumers of that news. And so that was good economic news. And then the other one, which was the Teamsters not picking anyone, but I have some thoughts about that, including that the Teamsters are possibly racist. And they've been sued for being racist by their own members. So there's some interesting politics from that, but we can talk about that next time on the Happy Hour. So we're all out of time. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.